Ryan's first impulse was to take one of the rowboats from Quimbley and set off immediately in pursuit of the fleeing muties and their prisoners. It was possible that Doc, Dean, and Mildred had already been butchered, but it was typical behavior for Stickies to spend some time on disposing of their captives, disposal that generally involved a great deal of pain and as much fire as possible. Stickies truly loved the brightness of fire. But Ryan soon realized that taking a boat would be pointless. He had no idea of the numbers of the raiding gang or how many vessels they had with them. What he needed to do was set out with as many armed men and women as possible from Quindley, preferably before first light. He could remember where they'd spotted the smoke among the trees, farther north along the shore of the lake. It was a fair bet that it had been the Stickies' camp, and that they would have returned there with their prisoners. Under Yehu's orders, the Bucket Brigade was quickly organized and worked well, water spraying onto the wood of the buildings that adjoined the heart of the fire, soaking the thatch and preserving it from the flying sparks. The timber walls, heated almost to the point where they would have spontaneously combusted, were literally steaming. Michael appeared again from the crowd, this time without Dorothy on his arm.
They got Dean and Doc and Mildred!
Yeah, we heard a burst of shooting, but we don't see any bodies. They got every one of the little children from the place next along as well. We're gonna go after them before dawn. You wanna come along?
Sure, of course I do. You asked Moses for permission?
Permission? We don't need his permission, Michael.
You do if you want to take boats from the Vill, or use any of the brothers and sisters.
You think you'll be able to stop us?
Michael grinned, the first time since their arrival in the Vill that he'd shown even a glimmer of his old self.
Guess not, Ryan.
The two-way mirror still concealed Moses from their sight, but his voice was calm and gentle, as though the disaster of the Stickies' attack were the merest of flea bites.
You wish to consult me, Ryan Corder?
Muties took all of your littlest ones, and three of our friends.
This is true. Sad, but true.
Hour before first light, I want to take as many boats as you can spare. Armed people. Land up the coast and hit the Stickies in their camp. With any luck, we can rescue a lot of your children as well as our companions. No?
No.
It's the best option I see. We have to do something to save the people the Stickies took. We can't let them be tortured to death. No one deserves that.
I hear all you say, Outlander, but you are deeply wrong.
Wrong to save lives? Wrong to save the lives of children and friends?
To your way of thinking. I see why you cherish such beliefs, Ryan Corder. But what has happened was destined to happen. Our young ones will have a rebirthing and will rejoin us here in the Vale of Quindley.
That's total shit!
Christy could no longer contain her anger, and she brushed away Yehu's restraining hand, striding forward to push her face within inches of the mirror.
You are strangers here. Best that you leave us.
Ryan considered putting a dozen spaced rounds through the dark glass in the hope of taking Moses out, but to do that, to assassinate their god, would bring a mob of armed men and women running for revenge.
Sure, Moses. The fire's out now. I'd be grateful for a bed for a few hours. Then we'll quit your vill.
I had not looked for such wisdom from an oldie. Your thinking is correct, Outlander Dix. You may be fed before departing. Yehu?
Master?
Arrange it.
Yes, Master.
Guess I could do with some shut-eye as well.
May your rest be gentle and filled only with the dreams of light and hope.
They passed the remains of the two murdered men, now just cooling ashes and tangled bones. The Vill was settling down after the horror of the sneak attack. The fires had been controlled. The only buildings destroyed were the living accommodation for visitors and the dormitory of the youngest children. Fortunately, none of Ryan's party had left any weapons or possessions in the rooms when they'd gone out to watch the sacrificial ceremony. Yehu organized straw-filled mattresses for them in a storeroom that the Vill used for late summer fruit. It was lined with high shelves of planed elm, was pleasantly dry, and smelled sweet and clean.
Sleep well. There will be food in the morning, and we can give you something to ease your journeying. Some bread and apples and flasks of water.
Thanks, Yehu. I appreciate it.
Yehu paused in the doorway. He had brought them a pair of torches, sticking them into brackets in the wall. Their flickering light showed the struggle in his face.
Moses' rule runs only within the Vill and its lands. If you wish to try to rescue your friends yourselves...
We appreciate that. You wouldn't know where Michael is.
No. He was walking with Dorothy out along the causeway after the fire was finished.
Risky, isn't it, lover?
Not very, I guess. Sticky's got what they wanted. Did it well. Good combat skills for them. I doubt there's any of them still around.
I'll wish you a good sleep and a clean wakening.
Yehu raised his hand in a sort of cautious wave, then left the building, pushing the door shut behind him. Ryan waited a few seconds.
Right. Let's get to some talking, and then some doing.
Ryan blinked awake. The small hut was almost totally dark, just tiny chinks of light between the feather-edge boarding. The albino teenager Jack Lauren had the best night sight of anyone Ryan had ever known, but his own vision was vastly better than average, and he could make out a figure, black against the blackness, moving slowly toward him. Ryan drew the Sig Sauer from by his head and leveled it at the intruder.
One more step and you get to be dead.
It's me, Ryan.
Michael, what do you want?
To come with you.
When we leave the Ville after first food?
No. I've been with you long enough to know better than that, Ryan. I may be stoop, but I'm not triple stoop.
So?
Ryan knew that JB was awake and would be holding the Uzi ready to fire, and that Christy alongside him was also alert, holding her own blaster.
So you're going to steal a boat and go after Dean and the others?
Who says this?
Don't waste time. I got the boat for you.
Where?
Tied up by the burned-out portion of the Ville. Smaller than the one we had the other day. 4 oars.
How about Dorothy, Michael?
She doesn't know.
And if she finds out?
I don't know, Christy. She's real special. I like her a lot. I think she likes me. But she believes in everything that Moses says, like they all do.
You don't?
No, not now. When we got here, my head was fucked by what happened in the jumps, and it seemed that Moses was the fountain of truth and wisdom, sort of thing they tried to teach at Nil Vanity. Then I saw the chillings and the way Moses treated the attack by the Stickies. They got all those little children, and he doesn't seem to care at all.
We go an hour before first light. We'll head north and land on this side of where we think the Stickies have their camp. Maybe too late for some of the ones they took. The Muti bastards like the dark for their fires and their sporting. But they might hold them and have a real good time this coming night. It's the best we can hope for. Go in and hit them as hard as we can.
How do you reckon to bring the children back here to the Ville? They must have 15 or 20 of them.
Sure. The plan is to spring them safe. Point the kids this way and hope to chill enough of the Stickies to slow them down and going after them.
How about...
Go on.
How about the Ville? How about Quinley and everyone? Stickies could come here again.
Trader used to say that you look after yourself and your friends. Anyone else you can help is just a bonus. But you never, never risk yourselves trying to help folk who won't get off their asses to help themselves.
They all dozed fitfully for the remainder of the long night. Ryan had always been able to set himself a waking time, and then rely on some mysterious element in his body and brain to pull him from sleep at the right moment. He rolled over and picked up the Stire. All of them had slept fully clothed, and it was only a handful of seconds before they were ready to move. Ryan gathered the three close around him.
One thing. Anyone tries to stop us, anyone, Michael, then we have to take them out. We can't risk being stopped. Dean, Duck, and Mildred are out there, waiting and relying on us.
There was just the faint eastern glow of the false dawn, enough to make out the pale blur of Michael's face.
You understand what Ryan's saying, don't you, Michael?
Yeah. If Dorothy happened to come out and try to stop us leaving, then she gets chilled. Sure, Ryan, I understand.
There was nobody out there. Despite the horror of the sneak attack from the Stickies, Moses had ruled that there were to be no extra security precautions, no more than the usual couple of lookouts at the front, overlooking the causeway. The rowboat was where Michael had tied it, the water of the lake lapping gently under its keel. The mirrored expanse of Champlain stretched away from them, quiet and calm.
I want to be on our way before full dawn. We'll be visible a long way off. I hope there might have been a mist to cover us.
Christy and JB took the bow pair of oars, settling them carefully into the oar locks.
You take that side, Michael. We don't need anyone to steer. We can do it with the oars. What's wrong? Are you having second thoughts about coming with us?
No.
Then we have to go.
We coming back?
Here? I doubt it. You want to?
Maybe, Ryan.
Then maybe we can come back here. We'll have to see which way the knife lands.
I hate having to make decisions. Doc said once that until you have to act, you still have a choice of an infinite number of possibilities. Once you actually do something, then you don't have any.
Sounds like Doc.
Yeah, it does.
Michael stepped down into the boat, balancing with an effortless grace. Ryan got in last, handing the rifle to the teenager, untying the painter from a wooden stake at the edge of the vill. One push of his oar, and they began to drift silently out into the vast stillness of the lake.
Try not to make any splashing until we're well away.
How long will it take us?
About an hour, I guess. Keep in close to the shore and the land when we get close enough to where we think their camp might be.
Then what?
Then we do what we can. Can't do any more than that.
Doc felt less than well. He had a bruise the size of a pigeon's egg just below and behind his right ear. His coat was torn. His beloved Lama was stuck in the belt of the tall mutie who appeared to be the leader of the sticky gang. There was a strip of skin peeled away from his right wrist by the vicious suckers of the first of the murderous attackers, who'd suddenly loomed silently in at them, out of the blackness of the night. Doc's hands were tied behind him with thin cord, so painfully tight that he could feel his fingers swelling, blood seeping from beneath the nails. Mildred lay on her side next to him, similarly bound, with young Dean a little farther along the line of prisoners. Three young girls from the vill were tied between him and Mildred. The remaining survivors of the raid were scattered around the clearing, all equally helpless. It was well past midnight, and Doc guessed that the coolness in the air and the faintest pallor toward the east was a token of the coming dawn. The fire at the center of the Mutie's camp still burned brightly, and there were piles of kindling all around the place. Most of their captors had slept at some point, simply pulling ragged blankets or piles of sticking furs over their bodies, leaving their prisoners to fend for themselves. So far, they had only killed one of the children, a little boy of about six. The rest of the young ones from Quindley had begun to scream at the appalling horror of the scene, until the stickies had raged among them, beating them into silence with short-hafted clubs and whips. Mildred opened one eye and looked around.
Actually managed to sleep a few minutes. Can't believe I did that. Soon be light.
I believe so.
Doc profoundly wished that he could have thought of something brave or witty to say, but he felt sick, old, and terrified.
Ryan will be here soon.
Seeing Dean's eyes on her, Mildred managed a wink to show him that she wasn't beaten yet. But with the stickies starting to rise and wander about, she didn't dare say more to reassure the boy. Doc had been trying to count the number of muties in the camp. Not that he had any serious hope of escape, but it gave him something to occupy his mind. The trouble was that they kept moving around, and they all seemed to look the same. Lean, with stringy hair, and dreadful complexions.
Count the legs and divide by two.
He made it around 30 or so. Two-thirds were male, though the women were difficult to tell apart. Most carried crude knives or axes, but several had blasters. It seemed as though they must have recently carried out a successful raid on a large vill or wag train. They had a stash of cans of lamp oil and tubs of pitch, which they'd used against Quindley. Doc had learned a fair bit about the variety of human genetic mutations that had flowered across Deathland since the long winters, and he knew that stickies were about as bad as they got. The only possible reason for taking prisoners was to torture and kill them with as much cruelty as possible. No ransom or trade would be taking place. Just some long, slow dying.
How is your bruised head, my dear Mildred?
Like someone's been using it to line a parrot's cage. How about you?
Chipper and perky and ready to be up and doing. Soon as Ryan and the others get here.
You sure they'll come, Doc?
Sure as I ever was about anything, madam. If they don't all arrive shortly, I shall, to put it mildly, be most frightfully disappointed.
It was a calm, serene morning, the sun breaking through over the tops of the heavily wooded mountains to their right. There was absolutely no wind to ruffle the limitless expanse of black mirrored water. Behind them, their vanishing wake stretched southward, creditably straight, arrowing toward the just visible bulk of the vill. By the time there was enough light for them to have been seen, they were far enough away to be almost invisible to the naked eye. Ryan had deliberately steered them close to the eastern shore and the shallows. He set a good pace, trying to send the small boat darting northward at the best possible speed. There was no weak link among the four of them, and the oars rose and fell in graceful, unflagging unison. Michael had been glancing back over his shoulder, disrupting the rhythm of the rowing. Ryan kept telling him to concentrate on his oar and not to worry about trying to spot any sign of the Stickies' camp. But it was the teenager who first saw the thin column of pale gray, almost white smoke, rising high above the dark mantle of conifers that shrouded the rolling hills to the east of the lake. The camp was roughly where he'd remembered it from the previous day, looking to be about a half mile inland from the shore. He stared intently behind them to the south, checking that there was no pursuit coming from Quindley that might hinder their rescue operation. But the water was scraped clean of any life.
Head in.
Think they'll feed us, Mildred?
I somehow don't think so, Dean.
For the moment, the prisoners were on their own, with the nearest of the muties 50 yards away. The little children from the Ville all seemed to have subsided into a collective catatonic stupor. They wouldn't look up or move or respond to Mildred's and Doc's futile attempts to rouse them from their dismal apathy.
Think Dad'll be here?
Does a dog piss in the sea? No, I fear that I have used the wrong phrase.
You mean does a mutie shit in the woods, Doc?
Indeed. I think it was something along those lines. But there is no scintilla of doubt that the inestimable Master Cawdor will be here with us in two shakes of a lamb's tail.
They aiming to chill us all, Mildred?
Got to be their plan, son.
You as well?
Me as well. Stickies aren't racially or sexually prejudiced when it comes to chilling, Dean.
Tie it up?
I don't think this lake's tidal. JB?
Doubt it. Just pull it up. Put a bit of shrubbery over it in case anyone passes by.
We might need to get away fast. There's a bad taste to things, lover.
Is it definitely the stickies?
For sure. Been some chilling already.
Dean and the others?
Can't tell. I have to wait for that.
Ryan stood back and looked at the concealed vessel.
That'll do it. Now everyone remember where this is. Take a careful look around. Like Christy says, we might be off and running good when we get back here. Won't be time to hunt around wondering where we hid it.
What's the plan of attack, Ryan?
I'll tell you when we get there. Crater used to say that it was hard to leave it too late to make a plan. But there was a lot of good men 6 feet under because they tried to make their combat plans too early.
Ryan had the Steyr slung over his shoulder, the Sig Sauer loose in its holster. The others all had their weapons ready as they began the cautious walk through the forbidding forest toward the Stickies' camp.
I smell burned meat.
Probably not ordinary meat.
You mean they're setting fire to the kids, or to... The world would be a cleaner place without those sick bastards.
Can't argue with that. Must be getting close, half a mile or so. Better move to double red. Stickies might be out hunting.
Yehu stood and glanced at the painting of the animal's skull. He shuffled his feet and stared at his own reflection in the mirror, waiting to hear what Moses might say about the news of the Outlanders escaping and stealing one of the Ville's valuable boats.
You believe that Sister Dorothy knew nothing of this, Yehu? Are you sure?
Sure as I can be. She was really upset. She had formed close links with the Outlander called Michael, and we believe that he was intending to stay here with us. Though she knew nothing of your orders to have Ryan and the others executed while they ate their food this morning.
It matters not. If any of them return, then have them chilled immediately. Immediately.
Yes, Moses. Immediately.
Doesn't look to me like the Stickies have been in these parts for very long.
You must be right. No damage to the forest. No hacked trails. They usually leave a circle of devastation for a mile or more around one of their camps. Reckon they were moving through. That's why we found that body on the hillside before we got down into the Ville.
They were sitting in a close circle behind a screen of wild cherries. An exquisite penstemon was flowering just to the right of them. Christy had picked one from a cluster of delicate pink blossoms, their heavy scent almost hiding the foul stench from the camp on the far side of the ridge.
How are we going to play this one, Ryan? A wreck first?
Yeah. I don't know if they got huts or tents or anything. Where they got the prisoners, tied up or not, how many of them, what kind of blasters.
There's a shit of a lot that we don't know.
Yeah, there sure is. But we know one thing the Stickies don't.
What?
We know that we're here.
Ryan carried out the creepy crawl himself, aware from endless experience that there was no substitute for a personal appraisal of the scene for a potential firefight. He counted around 30 Stickies, rather more than he'd anticipated, mostly men, and a few of them with blasters. He spotted one tall mutie sporting Doc's Lama in his belt, and had no doubt that Mildred's check pistol and Dean's Browning were also somewhere in the crude camp. He could see the prisoners easily enough. With so many of the muties to watch the captives, there had been no effort made to chain or wire them together. As far as Ryan could make out, from behind the screen of some feathery tamarisks, Dean, Mildred, and Doc were all alive and didn't show any obvious signs of serious injuries. With the excellent starlight scope on the rifle, it would have been easy for Ryan to have picked off at least half a dozen of the muties from where he was hiding. But that would still leave far too many to kill their prisoners before scuttling off into the woods around. This needed some thinking. The skinny leader of the muties was interested in Doc and Mildred.
What old fucks like you doing in that young place?
I asked myself the same question, friend, 1,000 times.
So what the fucking answer?
Answer is that I don't know.
Then you fucking stoop.
Yeah.
The bulbous eyes with her oddly forked pupils turned toward Doc.
You oldest fuck I never saw. We heard that Vill chills every fucker when they gets old.
You heard correctly.
So why are you alive?
Possibly my inherent charm. Perhaps my insistence on the most scrupulous standards of personal hygiene. That is the very best that I can offer by way of explanation.
The mutie looked at Doc for a long time, making the old man feel the sudden awful certainty of his now imminent death. Then the sticky smiled at him, oblivious of a thick thread of greenish spittle that was trailing down over its receding chin.
You funny fuck.
Thank you.
We give you fucking funny hot death, old fuck.